Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum and welcome to A Time for Justice. A Time for Justice is a show on the Elevated Places Network, and we are so thankful and blessed to have you all joining us tonight on A Time for Justice. My name is Sister Pamela Muhammad, and I am an attorney and I am the host of this show. Tonight, we are going to talk about strength under trial. As we talk about the failures by the legal system to give justice to Black people and their Black families. As you all know, this show, A Time for Justice, discusses legal and current events in a roundtable discussion of legal minds. We discuss this country's centuries-long failure to apply, uphold, and enforce the laws, and the overall failure of the legal system to give justice, and the negative impacts these failures have had on Black people and their Black families. Ultimately, we want fair dealing. We want justice under the law. But all too often, this is not the actions that we see. Our guest tonight will not make those excuses for racist conduct, which are really distractions from the truth. And we often see this, and this is distractions from the truth. These are the things that dissuade us from the path to justice. This is what is keeping us from the path to justice, the lies and deceptions and just the overall wickedness of this unjust system. So let's talk about justice, fair and equitable solutions, which are in the best interest of the people. As I said tonight, our show is entitled Strength Under Trial, and we're going to talk about failures by the legal system to give justice to Black people and their Black families. I pray everyone is doing well tonight, and I'm really thankful. As I say, we have two really special guests. We have two attorneys tonight, and they will be coming on in a minute. I'm going to go ahead and open up their mics. The first attorney that we have is Sister Yolanda Muhammad. And Sister Yolanda has been a contributor on this show in the past, and we're so thankful that she's here tonight. Sister Yolanda is the great-granddaughter of slaves and the first generation of her family to live free of Mississippi sharecropping. Sister Yolanda was born in Chicago, Illinois, was raised in both Chicago's West and South Side. Sister Yolanda joined the Nation of Islam in 91. She's blessed to be the mother of three Muhammad University graduates. That's right. Sister Yolanda has served in various capacities with the Nation of Islam, including administrative assistant for the Final Call newspaper in various positions inside the mosque. She also has a varied professional career that includes positions in association management, insurance, and education. She is a general solo practitioner at the law office of Yolanda Muhammad in Chicago. And she says that her specialty is problem solving. And she's growing. She's a growing expert in the field of real estate. Sister Yolanda is married. She's an active member of both MassMyIM and the MGT and GCC. Let me go ahead and open up Sister Yolanda's mic. And it's very interesting because Sister Yolanda is also an author, and she's going to talk to us tonight about her book. I'm so excited. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Yolanda.
Well, alaikum salam, Sister Pamela, and everyone that is listening. Thank you so very much for inviting me to be on this call tonight.
Oh, and thank you so much for your time and attending, Sister. We look forward to hearing from you as always. Next, we have Brother Attorney Deshaun Muhammad, and Brother Deshaun has been a practicing attorney since 2001. He's practiced law in the state of Tennessee. He says really all over the state on a broad range of cases. He is a former Chancery Court Special Master for Shelby County, Tennessee, and he has tried many cases both in the criminal and civil arenas. He has found that his passion is in the cases involving children and families, and he has been an attorney for the Tennessee Department of Children Services. Since that time, he's represented countless children and families in the court system in cases involving delinquency, child abuse, custody, and all aspects of family law. He's a father, a husband, and he is the father of a toddler. Brother Deshaun is a Chicago native, graduate of Rust College in Holly Springs, Mississippi. He attended law school at Drake University, and he is a works and has an office in the law office of Juan T. Williams. So I want to go ahead and open up Brother Deshaun's mic with us. Brother Deshaun, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, sister. It's wonderful to be back on your show.
Yes, sir.
Illustrious company.
Yes, isn't that right? We have Sister Yolanda, the author, tonight. Sister Yolanda, we're gonna play it up because this is a really big deal. But you both are so invaluable and such special attorneys. So I do appreciate you being on. And it's very interesting that you all both have some connection to Mississippi, with you actually going to school there, Brother Deshaun. Because one of the things we wanted to talk about with strength under trial. And we're going to use the definition of strength, I think, from the unity of the 22 million article in this week's Final Call by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And that, for me, I'm going to talk about how strength is unity, strength is love, strength is not fear of the enemy. As the Honorable Elijah Muhammad talks, he says, this lack of love for self and kind keeps us divided. And being divided, we are a nation of prey at the hands of our ever-open enemies. And so we'll come back to his article, but I just kind of wanted to start with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, as always, because it's always that we go to the primary source of any knowledge. We could be lawyers, doctors, or whatever, but the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and, of course, under the leadership of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, is our primary sources. So when we talk about trials, one of the things I wanted to bring out is Mamie Peel. Now, there is a article in this week's Final Call, and it's entitled Pursuing the Emmett Till Murder Case. And I thought it was very interesting because, y'all, we were all on the same mindset. Sister Yolanda, with her book about black males and actually love letters to my black sons, Brother Deshaun and I had talked about women and the persecution of women. And so you had a Final Call with the title Women in Prison, Suffering and Abused. I mean, there's a cover story on this. And you actually even have the article on Mamie Till, and it about, and she is the mother of Emmett Till. And as we know, now when we talk about suffering and we talk about a trial, you know, the murder of Emmett Till, as Brother Naba said, the murder of Emmett Till stands as one of the defining moments in American history. He was brutally beaten, tortured, shot, and tossed off of a Mississippi bridge, wires around his neck connected to a cotton gin, and his body plunged into the Tallahassee River. And so we remember his murder, and we remember that his murder sparked the modern civil rights movement, according to Brother Naba. And after his courageous mother, Mamie Till Mobley, allowed the disfigured face and body of her son to be displayed in an open casket. You know, but I had done a little research about her as well. And one of the things I wanted to read, and I think it kind of forms some of the basis of strength under trial, is that she made the comment in an interview. And the comment she made was, she described how she felt when she first saw Emmett, her son, when he was returned, his body returned to her, and we know it was very disfigured. She said, when I first looked at Emmett, she said, it seems like every bone in my body turned to steel. She said, instead of fainting, I realized here is a job that I have to do now. And she said, and I don't have time to faint. I don't have time to cry. I've got to make a decision. And her decision was that there's no way she could tell the world what she had seen. The world's going to have to look at this. This is what she says. She said they were going to have to look at, you know, her son, and that's going to help her tell the story. And so I think that's, you know, a really great testament to her strength. You know, I just wanted to share that. Yeah, so as we began our discussion, as we talk about, you know, lawyers, you know, this is a legal show, so we talk about lawyers having, you know, we do work in times of crisis. And sometimes, you know, we have to really bring some type of order to the crisis. We've got to bring perspectives. One lawyer described sometimes our work is like being an ambulance paramedic, because we arrive at people's crisis in their lives. And so in the Black community, we know not only do we have the wanton murder of our brother Emmett Till, we've had, as Brother Naba said, I believe we have had the Trayvon Martin, you know, we've had the George Floyd murder, we've had Ahmaud Arbery, and these are the Breonna Taylor. So many of our people have not received the justice. You know, so many people show the failures by this legal system to get justice to Black people, and we've been dealing with this for over 400 years. So I just kind of wanted to set that as a background, you know, as we're fighting for change. So, Brother Deshaun, I wanted to bring you in because I know that you are a trial attorney, and, you know, we kind of played with the thought of trials, because we know that there are spiritual trials, and in legal world, we have trials. So can you share with us, you know, anything, what is a trial? How do you approach a trial, I guess, in a legal setting?
Well, for me, it's a lot like a trial in the spiritual sense, because usually what, in the cases that I have, because I deal with family law, and I usually have, generally my client is the underdog, in at least in juvenile court. And, you know, even in family court, you're trying to protect the thing that is most important to your client, which is their loved ones. And, you know, their livelihood and all of those things. So it's the things that mean the most to a person, and you're trying to protect it. You're trying to help them to get some measure of justice in the most intimate aspects of their life. And so I approach it the same way you would approach a fight. I have to know every detail about my client's life. I have to dig really deep and try and figure out, you know, I often see myself, like the sister said, my job is to solve a problem. And I have to dig really deep, and I have to study both the law and the facts. And oftentimes I found that the facts are more helpful than the law. Knowing the truth of the situation helps you to figure out how to go through it. So it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of preparation. And the trial itself, that moment where you're in front of the judge or the jury, tends to be only the tip of the iceberg. What it took to get there is the part that nobody sees.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's awesome. And like you say, a personal trial is defined as a person, a thing, or a situation that tests a person's endurance or forbearance. And when we talk about legal trials, you know, this formal examination before judges. But, you know, I kind of thought of how in trials, you have to prepare. You have to practice. Sometimes it takes hours or days for you to study, as you're saying, you know, looking at the facts, looking at the evidence. You have to determine, is this evidence real? And sometimes, to me, these trials in our minds, these trials that we go through, these hard times, these crises, they're best overcome when we prepare, you know, and when we use strength. So, Sister Yolanda, I know that, you know, your type of law is a different type of law, but did you want to add anything onto the preparation for trials and particular conversation?
Well, one thing I want to do is applaud my brother Deshaun. I was just saying earlier to Sister Pamela that I don't have the fortitude to do criminal law or litigation in that way where the end result is saving someone's life, because as a mother with two sons of my own, it's very difficult for me to balance being in an unjust system that is based on most times lies or statistics or half evidence, and then you do your very, 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 very best, and it still is an unjust outcome. And I've seen some of the greatest attorneys in the Nation of Islam, I'm talking about brilliant, absolutely just God-gifted, go into the fight with all that they have, all the preparation, and the outcome still comes out not what we expected. But I am always reminded from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and from the Holy Quran, hard trials are necessary to establish truth. And sometimes we don't understand the enemy that we're facing, and that part of it in law is universal, whether it's selling a house, buying a house, opening a bank account, setting up your business as an LLC, as a nonprofit. It's always going to be a measure of you must be prepared. You must know as much as you can. But even after that, a factor of faith has to come in, and we have to realize we really have to do what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, which was separate and do something for ourselves, because we're not going to get equal justice under their system that's made to benefit them, no matter what type of law we practice. No matter, and that is in our family that's most exercised against the black man. Not that we're separate. I'm not saying we're separate, because anything against my man is a step against me. But it's most visibly exercised, the injustice is most visibly exercised against the black man.
Sister, I was smiling as you were talking, because you expressed one of my sentiments exactly when you were talking about walking into this knowing that you're walking into an unjust system. And that's been a trial for me since I began practicing, knowing that there really is no justice to be had in this system, but nonetheless, I got to fight this fight.
That's very true. And I think it's very important to me that, particularly in this quest of love letters to my black son, and Sister Pamela bringing up Mamie Till, because the death of Emmett Till really is, as Brother Naba said, a shift in our reality. So when you think about, and this is some of what prompted me to be a co-author in the book, when you think about in my grandparents' generation, my great-grandparents' generation, my grandparents' generation, and my parents' generation, they knew the deck was stacked. And so the thing that they did was fight to survive. Every day of their life, every minute, every waking moment was a training, the most intense training ever on the planet, to survive in this unjust system. But Mamie did everything she could to advise her son, Emmett, according to what we are reading now in history, to follow that, and it didn't work. So because it didn't work, she put her son's body on display as a sign to the whole world, that doesn't work. I don't care what you tell your children. And so I found myself behind time thinking, okay, I'm going to teach my sons how to survive. I'm going to teach my sons how to survive. I'm going to teach my sons how to survive. And sometime in the future when they get older, even though they were born in a nation, then they'll become God. But that's not the way of Master Farah Muhammad. My son, their generation, was born to be God, not to be a survivor of slavery. And so I found myself, I would drill my especially my boys. I'm looking at them. They so brilliant. They look so beautiful. I'm just drilling them. And there's a passage in the book where I write, well, I'm telling my son, he's getting ready to go out. And I said, son, where you going? Oh, I'm going with some friends. They're picking me up. And I look at his clothes. He got on this dark Nike hoodie, right? So I say, son, take that hoodie off. Put on that Fat Albert T-shirt. He like, Mom, don't nobody wear them cartoon T-shirts no more. I said, well, who's going to be in the car? How many boys going to be in the car? Don't wear a hoodie. Son, don't be sitting in the back. If anybody's smoking, don't sit by them. Do anybody in your crew smoke? I'm going through the whole drama, right? Is any girls going with you? You know, all of it. And my son just looked at me, and he, you know, not disrespectful scream, but he says, Mom, when am I going to get the chance to be a man? And it really, like, shocked me that I was doing this. The same thing that Mamie Till did with Emmett, it doesn't work. So we have to begin to focus on something else. And I'm grateful. I know I'm long-winded, y'all. I'm sorry. But I'm grateful for the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And I was listening to this lecture from Minister Farrakhan, The Problems in Relationships. It's on YouTube. And I thought, I was listening to it for another reason, because I was getting married. I'm going, you know, rocket science up on this black man, right? And the minister, he went into a little bit, well, let me say this. The minister is not elementary like us, where he starts with the marriage. He goes all the way back to the beginning, which is what he did, mothers with their sons. And so he began to talk about how mothers really are the ones that start the damage of beating down the black man and all of that, not out of lack of love, but just straight up fear. And from that, I promised myself, going forward, I'm not going to do that to my sons. And I want them to know all these beautiful things that I see in them that maybe the world will never tell them that they see too. Everybody sees it. We all see it. But we're afraid for them to be themselves, but that time is up. It ended with Emmett Till. You have to be able to be yourself, and we will find that being ourselves is the best. And it starts with just loving on our black sons and telling them how great they are. And really, our children are something like superheroes, you know, to get through this madness of this world. And we have to make sure that we tell them that. So, you know, it is an unjust playing field. To get back to the question, it is an unjust playing field, but Allah has specifically equipped us to be successful. And so we have to focus on that. I'm sorry for being so verbose.
Mr. No, you, I think you hit all the nails on the head. But
okay, Mr. Manuel, I think you're supposed to come in and save me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm on mute. And so, no, that was very, very beautiful. And I was saying we're definitely going to talk more about your book. I wanted to just remind and reiterate what Sister Mamie Till, the mother of Emmett Till, said when his body was brought. Because I think, again, the strength that she exhibited, she said that it seems like every bone in her body turned to steel. So instead of fainting, I realized here's a job that I have to do now. And she said, I don't have time to faint. And from that, you know, we understand that over 600,000 people saw Emmett Till's, you know, deformed and, you know, just horribly mutilated body. And, you know, it showed the racist, because her son was gone. And she actually even said that she recognized that perhaps he was a martyr, but she wanted other people to live and have a better life, you know, based upon her son being gone. So she, you know, she stopped the burial, you know, she made them open the casket. She opened up and bore that pain. And so I think sometimes when we go into these courtrooms, Brother Deshaun, coming back to you, you know, because sometimes, like you say, the cards are stacked against us, but there are some ways that we can fight that do bring solutions to families and ways that strengthen those families. And so can you tell us, what are we seeing in juvenile law right now? What are you seeing as being some of the most pressing problems with these, you know, our youth that we need to be looking at in the community?
For in my court, the biggest problems I'm seeing are violence. We've always had in our schools and everything. Hold on 1 second, sister.
Okay. Yeah. So, as he's talking about the violence and the fighting, I mean, these are things that you know are really huge issues. We see the attacks on the children by police. There's a report on the use of force and tasers being used on children, you know, who are under 21, and these children are posing no imminent threat. They're accused of nonviolent crimes. Many of them are running at the time these tasers are being used against them. So I was just go ahead, Brother Deshaun. Yes, sir.
No, I'm sorry. The circumstances that I'm seeing, the instances that I'm seeing in court are primarily violence, drug use, and sex abuse.
Yeah. I don't know. Sister Yolanda, are you there?
I am here. And, you know, in court, one of the chief things I see in court is that there is no connection to common sense. I remember when, and that our people think in common sense terms because that's the only way people know how to think, right? And we think as lawyers, we walk in knowing it's a scheme and I must try to evade the scheme. I was in court recently with a young brother. We were in criminal court, and while we were sitting waiting for his trial to come up, the bailiffs brought in a young brother in shackles, and this young brother was like maybe 5'6", real thin. He had a nice, clean look on himself, but just very thin, and they were charging him with escape. And I was thinking in my mind, escape? Where did he escape from? He looked like he could barely, you know, have enough strength to get out the door. But in Chicago, the term escape refers to violating the terms of the bracelet that they put on you, the house arrest bracelet. And so the judge was asking him what happened. And he said, well, I had my court date, and apparently You have an hour to get to court, and you have an hour to come back when you're on this house bracelet. And so
wow.
he says, my sister, who I live with and her two daughters, works a security job, and her relief didn't come, so she had to stay at work a little longer before she can come home. When she got home, I was already 30 minutes late. I kept calling to try to get a continuance and explain, but they told me the only way I can get a continuance is I have to come and see the judge. He said, so I got on the bus, I came down here, and they arrested me and told me, wait to see you, Your Honor. And she said, there was nobody else that could watch the children? And he said, no. She says, well, unfortunately, there's nothing I can do about it. You're going to have to serve out the rest of your term while you await your new trial incarcerated in jail. And I'm thinking, this
wow.
makes no sense whatsoever, but all the judge was dealing with was a statistic. She was
right.
dealing with the statistics say that when black men come in here and say X, Y, and Z, they're not telling the truth. And even if I want to believe them, statistically so, I can't believe them. And she wasn't paying attention to any of the actual facts of what the brother was saying. His sister was there
she
in court.
Care.
She had the girls with her. She had a letter from her job. They didn't care. They were like, these are the rules. And you find
right.
our people, we run up against that in every courtroom, no matter if it's criminal, civil.
Yeah.
Here are the rules, even in real estate. Here are the rules, and we don't care what really happened. This is the rule. And if you don't fit in this rule that the dominant culture made for the underculture to follow, it's too bad. And so, you know, we have to begin to teach our people how to evade falling into these traps. And that's very difficult to do.
Yeah.
I'm very sorry about the phone going in and out. I'm dealing with the transformer behind my house that exploded. And so, the power is going somewhere.
I'm glad to hear that.
But
yes, sir.
Sister made a really valid point when she stated that the rules were made for us essentially, because the amount of compassion you
right.
see in the court when a Caucasian judge is dealing with his own,
that's
and
right.
in truth, when oftentimes the problem I see is there are black judges that will treat everybody but black people better. And the amount of compassion even they will show to others is astounding, because black people don't necessarily receive that. But there's
yeah.
a whole lot of discretion in the law. And there's a whole lot of opportunity to, as that brother was saying, to look at the facts and to make a different decision. But when it comes to us, we often see that that's not there. I told Sister Pamela before about an instance where I had a juvenile, and the judge kept referring to him as a man.
Mm.
But this was a
right.
child of, like, I think he was like 14. But oftentimes our juveniles are not treated as children, and that's a big part of the problem.
Right, right, yeah. And so we're going to go to the phones because we have some callers who have some questions or comments. I just wanted to throw this out here because many of the parents of these juveniles, sometimes they are mothers, and we see that disproportionately where mothers are the people who are coming in and they're the only ones who are our clients, you know, fighting for our clients. And then we also are now seeing where black women are being incarcerated at higher rates. And we're going to talk about that the next time as we go into Sister Yolanda's part of how she, as a black mother, you know, fought back and is throwing solutions and has a determination to save her children and sons. So we're going to take our caller. We have Brother Daryl. Let's see, Brother Daryl, you have a question or a comment. Assalamu alaikum, Brother
yes.
Daryl.
Wa alaikum salam. So,
how you
Lord,
doing, brother?
Happy Savior's Day to everybody as well.
Savior's Day to you.
I'm happy to know now that I was able to get on your show all of this time. I know you had one, but I didn't know it was on the same phone number. So it's, thank Allah, last Thursday I was able to find out it was the same number. Just have to come on Tuesday. But my question is that what you were speaking about, a beloved sister, son that was murdered in Mateo, I remember watching that video. I bought it and watched it and seen how the world seen how they mistreated our beloved brother. And it was horrible, but she showed the world what was done because there's no justice. Same thing with our brother Emmett Till. I mean, Tamir Rice. I haven't heard anything else about that. I don't know if you heard anything about that. They had shot him down, but the car completely stopped and said that he looked like he was 21 years old. But there's no justice at all because 40 years ago today, is this as bad as it was then and it is now? My grandfather was shot down in the city of Detroit on the street, and he was shot over 17 times, and was no justice done about that. And we had to live with that even up to today to see that this is still going on. So it's no justice. You could go before this court, and you could, like you said, you have the best lawyers that we have in the nation, and they know they're speaking the truth, but just some kind of way in their mind, they just turn it around and say justified homicide. So we're still living in this time, even in 2022. So as come together and just keep our prayers up and keep it going, because we're going to get justice. So Allah is showing that to us as we speak now, if he tearing up their playground and letting them know time is up. So I really thank you for allowing me on the show. May Allah continue to bless you all, and you all stay safe. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, Brother Daryl, and thank you so much, sir, for calling. Okay, we have our next caller. Let's see, we have Brother Sultan Muhammad. He has a comment. Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Wa alaikum salam. How is everyone, and happy Savior's Day.
Happy Savior's Day to you, sir. Go ahead.
And I would like you to come and dovetailing right off what my brother just said about justifiable homicide. Our problem is we forget many times what we've been taught. When the children of Israel began to multiply, that was a conference, that was a council, and they talked about, well, what are we going to do? They say that if it be a girl, she shall live. If it be a boy, he shall kill him. Then we go to the Quran and we find the same thing. The justifiable homicide is that when you are outnumbered, the way we outnumber them, they have the teachings also. The wise has the teachings. Not just us. They broke into mosques. They broke into homes. They have been known to steal and have had the teachings for some time, which has actually helped them in their advance if we were looking to the areas of science revealed by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But the point that I'm making here is, it's justifiable homicide if you all outnumber us 11 to 1. It makes no difference what you did. Yaqub also had a plan where Yaqub, whatever you violated, the penalty was death. And if you listen to the language, oh, he has a record. Oh, he was wanted for a traffic light. He was wanted for whatever it is, it's justifiable to kill one of us. And because we don't look at the reality of what we've been taught, we are looking at millions who have been killed. And we are dealing with people who think that if we just let them know how we really are, well, that's why they have been able to control us like this, kill us like this, do us like this, because they know us better than we know ourselves. So the success of it is the reality of what the circumstances are. These people are trying to live. And they, those who are in power, they know, of course, that there is a way that they can live. One of the ways is to cut our numbers. And they're doing that depopulation every day, and is now being done by the millions. So what we have to do is the reality of what we're living in. We're not looking for hope. We have to make a way, as our brother was saying. We're going to have to separate. God is going to force us into separation.
Thank you. Sir. Yes, sir. Beautiful. Thank you so much, Brother Sultan. Assalamu alaikum. We're going to take our next caller. We have Brother Shahid Muhammad and Sister Tiffany Muhammad, I believe. Let's see. I'm opening up the mic. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. In the name of Allah, who came in the person of Master Fahd Muhammad, all praises is due to Allah for bringing us and raising up among us the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, and now in our midst, our Messiah, most honorable Minister Farrakhan. Thank you, Allah, for giving us this mercy. And I was, can you hear me, Sister Pam?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We hear you.
Okay. I was going to speak on Emmett Till. When I was 8 years old, coming from church with my sister, my cousin, on the bus, we was riding. They get off the bus, we get off the bus, and it's a long line of people. We walked around, and when I got up to the casket at 8 years old, I seen myself with my eyes, this structure that was supposed to be a 14-year-old boy that was, that they had decapitated. It terrorized me. It's been engrams in me for years where when I came home at night, I told my mother, leave the lights on. Anytime, just like they're saying, the Emmett Till story right now, as strong as I am right now, I don't want to see that. I've seen it with my eyes.
Yes, sir.
It was a terror if you've seen it with your eyes. A lot of you are young.
Yes,
sir. I mean, old enough to go back to that. And then after that, so Tom was talking about how they are. My cousin was 15, locking his business. The people in Beverly Hills, white folks turned around, U-turn, came and shot him down on the streets where we were, for nothing. Later on, in the same line, there was a boy on the corner catching a bus, a brother. They beat him to death with a pipe, white folks, in my day and time, at 8.
Yes, sir.
So what I'm saying, like Sultan said, we don't know ourselves. We don't know this devil. When I heard Honorable Elijah Muhammad speak in his teachings, it really agreed with me. And going back to Emmett Till and my cousin that got shot down, when his mother and them went to court, they identified the killer. Because she was a Christian, she felt like she should let them go. That's how we did. We don't know ourselves. What I'm saying is we should be glad, thankful, grateful, understand the blessing that we have in the Honorable Minister Farrakhan, giving us the teachings, giving us a reminder, giving us this gift that he's given us. I seen when Honorable Elijah Muhammad here, people was just obeying and just opening it up. We had heaven on earth then because we had a nation and did what he said do to build. Now we're supposed to do it right now. We can't just keep talking about it. We got to do what's right and do about it. We got to do what's right, follow the law, stop deviating, love following the law that he's given us to guide us. This is the grace of Allah even giving it to us, the weather that is hitting the country, what he's doing, and we need to get out of the way and do what God say do. Get out the way and do what Allah say do. We got to love that we have a guidance and a reminder in our midst. Thank you,
yes,
Allah,
sir.
And Master Fahd Muhammad. We can't forget that. Do that.
Yes, sir.
So,
yes,
thank
sir.
You, Sister Pam, for having us on your show. I hope I didn't talk too long. I hope I didn't
no,
talk
thank
too
you.
Much. And I hope I
Beautiful.
Didn't offend anybody. And what I see.
Oh, praises be to Allah. All praise due to Allah. Thank you, Brother Shahid. And was there another question or comment on your line? No? Okay.
Yes, hold on.
Oh, I'm here, Sister Pam. And I guess
yes. Like,
yes. Assalamu
alaikum. Wa alaikum salam, Sister Attorney Tiffany. How are you, ma'am?
Thank you. Oh, alhamdulillah. Thank you so much. I'm enjoying the talk. Thank you so much for the brother and sister attorneys that we have in the Nation of Islam. We are a mighty nation. And I just had one a personal experience that I wanted to share, and I always was so amazed that my husband attended. Literally, you know, some things are figuratively, some things are, he literally attended that funeral. Wow. Anyway, I actually being in Muhammad's Mosque 45, I believe around 1999, one of our awesome brothers, Brother Norris, I believe, was the person who had invited Miss Mamie Till, Emmett Till's mother, to Muhammad Mosque 45, Houston, Texas. And I was a vanguard at that time, and I was blessed to serve, to be a service for the dinner that the brother, Dr. Halim Muhammad, had given for her. And it was such an okay. honor, and it was just amazing just to see her beautiful, beautiful. She was such a beautiful woman, spiritually yes. and physically. And she was able to give us, you know, stories. And I was like a 19, 20-year-old vanguard listening and looking. And just, wow, just so historical just to hear from her. And I recall she said a lot, but I know one thing she said, that her son didn't whistle at that white girl. She said she had taught her son to stutter. I'm sorry, he stuttered, so therefore she had trained him to whistle to get out of the stammering tongue. So he would, you know, he would do a whistle to be able to, you know, speak. So that she was sure it was what had taken place when that demon woman, you know, reported and caused all the stir. But she said that out of her mouth. And I'm listening. I'm like, oh, Allah. You see,
yes,
it just
ma'am.
Don't take much to be Satan. So anyway, that's our call. I don't think anything legal needs to be said on my end. If you all are doing a wonderful job. Thank you so much. As-salamu alaykum.
Thank you. All praise due to Allah. Thank you, Sister Tiffany, for that call, and Brother Shahid. And next we have a call. We have Sister Marguerite Muhammad, and she has a comment. Let me open up your mic. Sister Marguerite. Walaikum salam, ma'am. How are you?
Walaikum salam. I'm doing good, sister. Enjoying this cold weather. And I was so intrigued when I came in and you all were talking about Emmett Till, because that was something I had been discussing with my husband. I was born 2 weeks before Emmett Till was kidnapped and about 8 miles away in the next town over when this happened. So we were nourished, you know, on what had happened to Emmett Till. The last year of my father's life, he was 93 at the time. I was blessed to stay in Memphis so I could come down and visit him. And we were driving over that river where they had thrown Emmett Till's body. And so I began to ask him about that time period and what was going on and how were they feeling and the whole backstory. And he told me that, we all know that these people were storekeepers. And I was really delighted to hear him say how the black people unified and they would not go to their stores. They would go to towns and towns away to shop, but they would not shop at these people's store, you know, the woman and the husband and the brothers, and they ended up losing their business, going bankrupt, and really became destitute behind what they had done and some other things he has told me. But I'm dealing with a situation now, 10-year-old son, and with the parents who, and we can be as guilty as the white man can be guilty, and I'm having to point this out to them. He's a 13-year-old child that does things that 13-year-old children do. But these parents cannot see that he's a 13-year-old child. They're thinking, well, he shouldn't lie. He shouldn't do this. He shouldn't do that. He shouldn't do that. I say, well, you did that at his age. You don't want to punish him unjustly and just out of proportion because he's doing things that children do. And so
yes,
I
ma'am.
Sent them a study, a federal study that I had found while I'm, you know, working with the Black Mothers Forum on how black boys are looked at as being older than they really are. Say a 10-year-old black boy is expected to act like a 20-year-old. And this, you know, it impacts them throughout life. So as these parents are complaining to me, tell me what their child did, you know, I said, well, you verify the study that I have read and how you're expecting him to act like a 20, 21-year-old, and he's only 13. Well, I didn't do. Well, that's you. But I'm telling you what 13-year-olds do. So just want to make that comment.
Yes, ma'am. That's a very important comment. Brother Deshaun, did you want to say anything on that topic? I know it reminds me, Sister Marguerite, that in juvenile law, one of the biggest problems is when parents tell on their children. They give away their children's right to remain silent, and they will, under the name of, I want to discipline my child, you may incriminate your child, and your child needs a lawyer. Your child has the right to remain silent. And so we do have to make sure that we're very careful about not doing things that make our children in harm's way or subjected to punishment by talking to the lawyer first and, you know, protecting that child's right to, like you say, be a child. Brother Deshaun, did you want to add anything to that?
And remember that the court is, A, not your friend. They are not here to help you parent. That is not what is real, you know. They will tell a parent that you can't physically discipline your child, but if they get in the system, they will find a way to physically discipline your child. You know, you have to discipline your child, whether it be whatever means of discipline you use, and be just, but do not use the court system as an arm of parenting. It is not meant for that, and it does not do that well. When I worked for the state, we had a constant refrain that the state is not a good parent. You know,
right.
That there are times when being in state's custody is better than the situation that the child came from, but it is never the best situation. And there is never a time when the court system is good at facilitating parenting. That's not what they're there for. Allegedly, it's for the purpose of rehabilitation, but the truth is, when it comes to our children, generally, it's there for the purpose of punishment, and I'd say it's some steps beyond punishment. At times, it can essentially be torture.
Depopulation agenda.
That is not what they're there for, and I advise all parents to please not use the court as such.
Yes, sir.
That would be my
question. Yeah, refraining from getting in front of the judge and saying, I told that girl not to do that. Don't do that. Maintain your right to remain silent. Thank you, Sister Marguerite, for that call. That was very important. And so, you know, I want to get to Sister Yolanda because she wrote a very exciting book. But I also wanted to talk about the fact that black women and imprisonment and the incarceration rates have risen. And this is in a story by our sister, Almisa Muhammad, and it's in this week's final call, February 1, 2022. It's entitled Trauma in the Highest Form. And it talks about the suffering and the abuse of black women in prisons, saying that, incarceration of women has increased over 700%. This was in a study from 2020. They talk about the abuse that goes on in these prisons, and I do encourage us to read it. But I think one of the most important issues I wanted to bring up is how, you know, they're talking about a cycle where incarcerated women who were born into incarceration, one lady was born and her mom was incarcerated when she was pregnant with her, and then this woman, this sister, had a child while in prison. And so this is a, you know, kind of a cycle. And then it's very important that we note that without a woman to teach a little girl how to grow up and be a woman, then, you know, what happens? What happens when your mother is not there to raise you? And so when you have more than 60% of women in state prisons having children under the age of 18, and this is another statistic that our sister Alnisa wrote in her article, she quoted that from the Sentencing Project. You know, she talks about how 5 million children nationwide have a parent in jail or in prison. So this is just giving us something, you know, audience or our callers, that we as responsible, wide awake brothers and sisters in the nation, when we're trying to make our communities decent and safe places to live and teaching our people, this is a solution. Because, again, we're looking at the unity of the 22 million, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has taught, and those are our solutions, strength in unity, strength in love, strength in not fear of the enemy. And so I want to move into Sister Yolanda, because Sister Yolanda is an attorney, as you all know, but she also wrote a book. And she wrote a book. She talked about it a little earlier, but she did write a book called Love Letters to My Black Son. And this book is available on Amazon. And she talked about just a little bit. It has some issues dealing how the children daily deal with hatred and violence and police brutality, the negative imagery, and the lyrics, you know, that we know. So this is a book that she wrote. And we want her to tell us why she wrote the book, what made her write this book, and how we can get it. So, Sister Yolanda, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Sister Pamela. You know,
yes,
I'm going to talk about the book, but I wanted to segue in two other points that I think are relevant.
Oh, definitely. Yes, ma'am. Please. Thank
Sister
you.
Sister was mentioning earlier about Emmett Till stuttered. And one of my sons, my youngest son, he stuttered. But this showed the importance of the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, where he gave us student enrollment in actual facts and gave us how fast thought is, how fast sound is. I took my son to a speech therapist, and the speech therapist was not able to help him. I took him to another speech therapist. Speech therapist was not able to help him. And then I took him to an MGT who was also a licensed speech therapist. And she said, Sister Yolanda, your son is not stuttering. Now, I have the mindset about what I was hearing from the enemy. I'm admitting it. I thought, girl, you hear my son talk every day. You know he's stuttering. She said, no, ma'am. His thought is traveling faster than he can say the words. And she said to him, she looked at him dead in his face,
wow,
like a good auntie, and said, Basim, slow down your thinking and wait before you speak. As
wow.
Allah is my witness, my son never stuttered again a day in his life. See,
wow,
that's why
crazy.
You have to write a love letter, because our whole concept of how we think about our children is not our own. It's not our own. We see television, you look at the boy who pants is sagging, who got twists in his hair, he got a hoodie, he's a criminal. And then we adopt that thinking, and we move forward like it's the truth, when it is not. It's not the truth. And I love what Brother Deshaun said is, the court is not your friend. And they use this word, rehabilitate. I just wanted to read it because I hate it. It says, I hate it in the sense of, courts are going to rehabilitate you. It says rehabilitate means to restore someone to former privileges or reputation after a critical or official disfavor. We never had no privileges. We don't need rehabilitation. We need resurrection. So
yes, ma'am.
When you think about it in that way, what we do every day with our sons, male or female, mom or dad, what we do with our children is a mimic of what was done to us. That's why a sister will go in front of a lawyer when her child is in trouble or a police officer and begin telling on her child. Because our parents did that in the South, especially Mississippi, and I've seen it done. The Caucasian said, beat this boy. He's a troublemaker. And your parents would beat you. Not out of they thought you needed a beating. They were trying to save your life. We have to come out of that. That's why I love when you said that quote about Mamie, was that her whole body became steel, and she knew it was something that she had to do. She had to send out the alert. It's over.
Yes, ma'am.
We can't accept this anymore. And so when I was thinking love letters, I was thinking just that. The years of damage, and I'm not the only author. There were 9 authors, 8 women and 1 father. And one of the fathers said, I didn't have the privilege of growing up with my father. No fault of his own. You know, it was just a society that he was born in. But I wanted to make sure that I poured out everything that I have in me into my sons. And in case I missed something, I'm going to write it in this love letter. That's huge.
Yes,
because how
beautiful.
He looked at his father, he wasn't angry. He didn't take on that mindset, oh, absent black fathers. And he took on the mindset of love. And love is everything. Love
yes,
is everything. And it's all powerful because we see that, you know, and I've been in the Nation of Islam 31, going on 32 years in a few months. I love this teaching because it is, and I don't care, you know, I'm not the only Muslim author. Sister Maria, the minister's daughter, wrote a chapter as well. But it's a solution. It's a good solution. And when you see the love of Minister Farrakhan for black people, solves problems. The love is what solves problems. Love is what solves problems. That's why so many black women are going to jail. And I guarantee you it went from the Million Man March, the numbers increased because the minister asked 2 million black men on the mall, apologize and rededicate yourself to your women and your family. And that absolutely happened in all of our lives. Mm. Then he called the mothers. And from that trajectory, every year, he lifting us. The immeasurable value of women. He keep lifting, keep lifting, keep lifting. You see the numbers of abortion rates going down, going down, going down among the original family. So they had to attack us. These people
yes, ma'am.
Are playing for keeps. We're the only people who think that it's still, you know, give me the jab so I can go back to a restaurant. Hell, these people are playing for a keep. And the only way that we are going to get any peace is to separate from them and establish something for ourselves. As long as we keep trying to intermix where their policing is the policing for us, we're going to be killed. As long as we keep thinking their brand of love and their explanations for tough love and love is love. And we're the purest loving people on the planet if we're left alone. So we have to do just what Minister Ishmael said on Sunday. Sit somewhere and listen to your sons, listen to your children, communicate, think.
Yes, ma'am.
And that's what I wanted to, all of the authors, we took some time and we just thought, what do I want to say to my sons? And what I wanted to say to my sons is you are absolutely brilliant. There's nothing like you. There's nothing ever going to be like you. You're very unique. Bask in that beauty. Bask in that.
That's right.
And the more
yes,
we
ma'am.
Find, the more I find as a parent, because I have to make a switch, right? I have to make a switch.
the more I find that I compliment my sons and tell them about, I'm not fake complimenting. I'm just watching, listening to them, and highlighting the God that I see in them, the attributes of God I see in them. The more I tell them that, the more peace is in our life.
Yes, ma'am. That's right. Beautiful. Let me take this one caller, and because she's been holding for a minute, Sister Barbara, but thank you so much, Sister Yolanda, for that. That's beautiful. Very beautiful. Her book is entitled Love Letters to My Black Son, and you can get it on Amazon. We're going to take this caller. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Barbara.
Wa alaikum salam, Sister Pamela. I am enjoying this show so much. Everyone is making such beautiful, beautiful points. Excellent.
Praises be to Allah. Yes, ma'am. Thank you for calling, Sister Barbara. Did you want to make a comment or a question? Do you want to add in?
No, she's one of our lawyers.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm just listening to all the different people who are sharing their thoughts and their ideas, and it's excellent, excellent. I have nothing to add. Everyone is doing such a wonderful job.
Praises
you know,
to Allah. Yes,
I'm analyzing the situation and talking about how to deal with it. Yep.
Yes, ma'am.
Very, very
praise
good.
Praises to Allah. All praises due to Allah. Thank you so much, Sister Barbara, for calling in with your comment.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. I'm
okay.
going to keep Assalamu listening. It's very nice.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay,
thank
Sister
you.
Pamela.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Yes, ma'am. And you know, so Sister Yolanda, in the context that you just lay out about, you know, the things that you took into your own hands to, as you say, the minister taught us about relationship and proper relationships. Because when we look at this, you know, and Brother Deshaun and I were talking about it in our title, the legal system, you know, failures to give justice to black people. And we looked at black women, you know, and because some of the obvious reasons, but it comes down to the fact that we must care for ourselves. And, you know, when we look at black women and this incarceration rate, I was kind of like, well, what are black women going to jail for? And we know that it's an illegal targeting. We know that it is part of the depopulation agenda to just kill black people. You know, but we also know that, as we spoke last week, we were talking about making a job for ourselves, and we looked at the fact that, you know, the unemployment rates are very high, and we know that, you know, sometimes the drug abuse is something, as Brother Deshaun brought up, because, you know, our people are using drugs, you know, in forms of escapism and, you know, the sometimes with some of the other things that cause black women to go to prison, being the victims of domestic abuse, having mental health challenges. They say 73% of women in state prisons and 75% in local jails, you know, are people with mental health problems or substance abuse problems. You know, women are attacked. They're not seen as young girls. You know, they're seen as predators. Or, you know, we have Brother Deshaun and I were talking about the missing black women who go missing and nobody looks for them. We have this, you know, young woman who was found murdered or found dead. Just recently, you all have heard about that case. I can't call her name, but you know, it's not looked upon as other, there's just a complete failure to give us justice, and there's just a complete failure to respect the lives, our lives. And so we know we must care for ourselves. And, you know, so that's why one of the things I found to be fascinating about your book, Sister Yolanda, and Brother Deshaun, did you want to weigh in on any of what I said? Because you are in the courtroom in the trenches, this is what you do.
No, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And, you know, the incident that you're talking about, I don't remember the name of the family, but it was an incident in Texas where it was it was a Hispanic family, and, you know, we are basically one family, the original people. But it was a Hispanic family, and the mother and children had been missing for 2 years, and they had been begging the local sheriff and anybody who would listen to look for these people. The way that, you know, when all of these blonde white girls who go missing and everything, we see them for years on everything. They have shows, what's happening with the investigation. But nothing was happening with this family. They kept pressing, and they kept getting that, well, we've exhausted all our options. We can't figure out what happened to them. So, oh, well, that's what's up. There's no way to find them. And this group of divers with a YouTube channel, they just volunteer, go places, and try to find stuff. Somebody got in touch with them, and they came to this place. They'd never been there before. They just looked at it on a map and was like, is there any body of water around this area where the mother and the children and the car could have been submerged if nobody can find it on land? And they looked at it on the map, went straight there, and within 1 hour, they just went down and looked, and they found the car, and it was brought up, found the bodies inside the car. That's the difference in effort that we see with this system, with us and everybody else. That's the difference in care. That's why we say that we have to separate, and that's why we know that we will not get justice until we give ourselves justice.
That's right. Yeah, no, that is so. And it goes back to what Sister Yolanda was saying about how we have to love ourselves and love our children. Mm-hmm. You know, I loved what Brother Ishmael said on Sunday about talking to our young people and really, you know, being that first line of communication. Because what is really one of the things I wanted to bring up, when we talk about women incarcerated and the fact that, as I quoted from Sister Alnisa's article, children are sometimes growing up more often now without parents, without a mother in the home to teach them. So that is really putting a lot of children in the situation when their parents are incarcerated. They have to stand for themselves. And so then it's pushing that attitude of, I just have to do for me. I got to get mine. Nobody is nurturing me. Nobody's loving me. So then this is something that's being pushed as being normalized. And so this spirit of, well, I don't need you, Mom, or I don't need you, Dad, because, you know, the respect and the ability to realize that, you know, we have to be united. We can't be divided, and we definitely can't be divided within our families with our own children. You know, so these are really important legal developments that this enemy is, I think, throwing out for depopulation. Because if you can divide the children from the parents, then that, you know, allows the children to be prey. As the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, because I want to quote it, he said, this lack of love for self and kind keeps us divided, and being divided, we are a nation of prey at the hands of our ever-open enemies. And so now we're seeing this type of division even coming into to homes. And so, I think that communication is such a key. Yeah.
And I didn't get a chance to comment on all the beautiful things that the sister said, but when she was talking about the communication with her son, and, you know, especially when she was talking about that the reason the minister is successful is because of love, I can speak for myself and everybody who I've introduced the teachings to. The minister is successful because there's no question that he loves us. There's no question that he loves his people, and there's no question that he loves the truth that he stands on. When you're willing not just face death, because many people face death, but to face all the health problems that he is facing, to face everything that he deals with, and to continue to show up, to have an entire government that hates you and just continue to show up. I mean, he could have retired so long ago. There are people who actually say that he can't really be real because they should have killed him by now. But he keeps showing up, and it's that continuing to show up that shows that love. And that's the blessing that we have, and that's the example that we have, and that's what we have to do for our children and our community, is we have to love one another enough to keep showing
up. That's right.
Because black people will make you want to go sit down, but we got to keep showing up because there's nobody else who's going to do it.
No, you're right. And like you say, love one another enough to want to work with each other, because I think that was another point that I noticed from Mamie Teal. When she looked at her son, she decided that she needed the help of others to bring this to the forefront. And so she wanted to expose his, you know, his body, you know, to the over 600,000 people saw that child. And the thing that I think it says for me is that even if I'm preparing for a trial, we started out with the analogy of what lawyers do when we prepare for trial, and it can be complex and it can take many hours, and we have all these boxes that we're dragging around, Brother Deshaun. Books be strewn everywhere. You know, we've fallen asleep at the computer interviewing witnesses. But one of the biggest things that you will want to do is to seek out help. You know, you want legal assistance. You want an associate attorney. You want to call somebody else and ask them, what do you think about this question? Sister Yolanda, I'm going to call you and say, can you come on the show, Sister Yolanda? Because, you know, she's just an awesome person as well as you. So this mindset that we need each other and that our unity is more powerful than an atomic, you know, bomb is just so important. You can't do it alone. And that's something that, you know, this individualism, it just has to stop. Because even with the Emmett Till case, you know, those white folks, they collected money outside in the streets to hire attorneys to defend those murderers. You know, they stuck together.
Not just them, sister. Just about everybody who's had a major trial for killing black people has had a GoFundMe, and they have raised millions. That's so right. Even that's today, right. That's the case, and that's the example of unity that we need to follow. When one of us is in trouble, if we can help, we have to have that type of commitment and that type of love.
Yeah, you're right. And so, again, just quoting the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in the article on the final call, the unity of 22 million, he says, what more do we need but unity of the whole for the whole? What actually is preventing this unity of 22 million or more of us is the ignorance and the foolish love and fear of our enemy. He said, in the professional and leadership class of this nation of 22 million black people up from slavery, and as was pointed out earlier today by Brother Naba, that is, we have many more than the 22 million because, of course, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad spoke these words, I believe, in the 60s. So, yes, the unity. So, Sister Yolanda, we just are so thankful to have your, you know, discussion. You were proactive on writing a book, and the love was important. You talked to us about, you know, how you allowed your son to really set say, he, you know, what do you need to be a man? You don't need, you know, your mom perhaps just maybe micromanaging. And so those were some of the lessons that, that you saw. What else have we seen in terms of just lessons that, like you say, you don't want to be raised children who are slavery survivors, or what did you say? And also, can you talk to us about the Black excellence? Because I know that's something that we have heard the minister talk about as it being the key. Yes, ma'am.
Absolutely. And thank you, Sister Pamela, because we are slavery survivors, and it's a, not hilarious. I don't even know what the word is. Shocking, I guess you would say, surprisingly shocking. But when I tell people my mother picked cotton when she was 3 years old, and people like, oh, she exaggerated, what? And then I met Sister Pamela today, whose mama picked cotton at two.
Which
so,
is two, yeah. Yeah.
You think about our people out here in these streets, I mean, in these fields, in the streets, same difference, with a sack on their back, pulling in the hot sun from sun up to sundown all day until they could escape, real escape, not that thing that the brother did with the house arrest bracelet. And they ran up out of wherever they were to come here to a different type of picking cotton, right? There's nothing we can be but superheroes in this kind of environment, because the average person can't do that. They just can't. We're very strong. And if we spent time just thinking that our exploits in our daily life is nothing, we miss the excellence.
Mm-hmm.
You think about a person like Aretha Franklin, who had a baby when she was 12 years old or younger.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't abort her baby. And that sister's voice rings in our ears right now as God of singing, right?
That's right.
You can't find no other people who can do that. That's us. And so if we take the time to focus on all of the beautiful things that we do every day, like make it home. I didn't applaud my sons. You made it home, son. Whew, you something else. And make them really sit and think. Look how brilliant you are to be able to function in a world that's totally opposed to you in every aspect, in the food, in the water, in the air, in the neighborhood, in the infrastructure, in the schools, on the jobs, in the relationships, in the medicine, and everything. They're totally opposed, yet we survive and be smiling. That
yes,
is
ma'am.
Extraordinary. And we must always point that out to one another, that we are extraordinary, because we are. Not extraordinary
yes.
to the exclusion of other people, but our extraordinariness is hidden behind this mask of hatred that we share. We continue to share it. You know, we continue to say it. We continue, every time we see a black man, we come up, pull your pants up. You ain't got nothing else to say? Yeah,
yes,
it's a lot we could say. Brother, you are very tall, or you're very thin in your proper size. You're beautiful. And you say that to a black man, you know what he's going to do? Pull his pants up.
That's right.
We've all done it. Say something nice to our sister, or you say to a young sister, you're beautiful. I could see you in the mosque. I could see you in my church. You're extraordinary. Your skin is fabulous. You're not lying. You're telling the truth. And you bring out the best in us when we focus on that. And I'm asking everybody around me, refocus. We can't carry this slave survival mentality no further. It's time for us to start practicing being God.
That's right.
The children of the Most High God, not the descendants of slaves forever, because we're not going to be slaves forever.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And that's paying all homage to the struggles and the torture that our ancestors went through and all of the struggles, you know, that they went through, you know, before us. But there is, like you say, there's a time now that black people are the rulers. And I want to quote Brother Abdul Sharif Muhammad. We talked about this in an article last week on, and he was quoted as saying, but even being undereducated, we're still using our genius to do for self, he added. And he said, this is the time of the divinely foretold rise of black people, and nothing can stop what God has ordained. So, you know, this is our time. And as you talk about black excellence, the minister has told us that that is one of the keys to fight, what is that, inferiority or white supremacy, is black excellence. You know, so as you said in your bio, you've raised two children, or I think three of your children graduated from Muhammad University of Islam. That's black excellence. You know, who does that? You know, when they talk about this critical race theory now and how they don't want to teach it in the schools, I say, okay, my children go to their own school, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. We teach that history every day, and we teach it in our homes. So we have to, you know, go on and build these communities and make our own communities decent and safe places to live. Yes, ma'am.
Sister Pamela, I want to add this, too. I had three of my own biological, but I had three others that came out of Muhammad University, two nephews and a niece. And I'm telling you, when they engage people, they're like, what? How old are you? They can't even imagine the thought process that comes from being among your own and being in a school system where everybody in the building is exuberating love for you.
That's right.
Just think you go to school and, of course we know the enemy is among us, but for the most part, everybody in the building is invested in your successful outcome. That's huge.
Right.
That's why we need to get away. I mean, you know, the ridding is Allah's work. But we need to get away from them and get our own stuff where we can be ourselves.
Yes,
we can be ourselves.
Yes,
and I was reminded that Artie Duncan, he was the Secretary of Education under Obama. He came and toured Muhammad University. That man was so impressed that he went back and instituted uniforms for schools because he didn't even know how to replicate Muhammad University. So he tried to replicate what he saw. It must be the uniforms. But it was the love. It was the love of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan bringing our schools back to us on the principle that Master Farah Muhammad came, and he is God, and he raised up the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and he came to save us. That point number 12 is the principle. So it's based in love. In an environment where we are loved, we thrive all day, every day.
Yes, ma'am. That's
right. Excellent, but it's excellent.
Yes, ma'am. Well, yes, ma'am. Well, we are out of time, and thank you all so much for tuning in this week to the Elevated Places Network presents A Time for Justice. I appreciate everyone who called in with a question or a comment. You made the show just so fabulous. I appreciate the special guest that appeared tonight. I thank you all so. I was just so humbled that you all would take your time to, you know, lend your voice and your expertise. Brother Deshaun Muhammad, attorney, as well as Sister Yolanda Muhammad, as well as being an attorney and an author. And you all can reach me, Sister Pamela Muhammad, at my email is pamlegal2000@gmail.com. That's if you have any questions or comments. And I would like to thank you all for listening to the Elevated Places Network presents A Time for Justice. To hear previous shows, you can log in to
A Time for Justice on the Elevated Places. I would like to thank Sister Dr. Ava Muhammad and the Elevated Places team. That's Sister Donna Muhammad, Brother Terrence Muhammad, Sister Rona. I'd like to thank my producer, Samaya Muhammad. And I would like to thank you all once again for listening. And tune in next week for more informative discussions. As-salamu alaykum.